Medicom Medical Publishers produces peer-reviewed reports and highlights on major medical meetings. We bring the Congress to the physician.
Welcome to this podcast, which is brought to you by Medicom Medical Publishers. Today, I will be discussing six presentations that were held at the annual meeting of the Heart Failure Association, which was held in Prague, Czech Republic, from May 20 to May 23. Enjoy listening. I would like to start by talking about results from the Redwood HCM trial. This study investigated aficamten in patients with non-obstructive hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. Aficamten is a next-in-class cardiac myosin inhibitor designed to target the myocardial hypercontractility and impaired relaxation that is responsible for the pathophysiology of non-obstructive hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, or NHCM, resulting in generation of symptoms and function impairment. This was the rationale to explore aficamten in cohort 4 of the Redwood HCM trial as a potential novel therapy for NHCM. Professor Ahmad Masri of the Oregon Health and Science University in Oregon, USA, presented the results. In cohort 4, 41 patients with symptomatic NHCM with a left ventricular ejection fraction, or LVEF, of at least 60% were screened and treated with aficamten in addition to standard of care. Aficamten, in available doses of 5, 10, and 15 milligrams, was uptitrated if LVEF was at least 55%, maintained if LVEF was 50 to 54%, downtitrated if LVEF was below 50%, and discontinued in case LVEF was below 40%. At 10 weeks, dose titration of the myosin inhibitor led to a modest and reversible reduction in LVEF from baseline of minus 5.5%. No treatment interruptions or down titration events, according to the protocol, were necessary. The participants showed a mean improvement in the Kansas City Cardiomyopathy Questionnaire of 10.6 points, and this was a significant change from baseline. Also, 58% of the participants had clinical reduction in symptom burden, with almost half of them reporting moderate to very large improvements. "This far exceeds what you expect from placebo," said Professor Masri. The improvement of symptoms was accompanied by distinct reductions in cardiac biomarkers. Significant improvement in NT-proBNP was seen, with an average decrease of 66%. At 10 weeks, 3 participants experienced LVEF below 50%. All LVEF returned to baseline levels after 2 weeks of washout. In addition, there were no serious adverse events attributed to aficamten therapy. A subgroup analysis showed a consistent treatment effect across multiple subgroups, independent of responder definition. Notably, 7 patients with mid-cavitary obstruction, who are often excluded from other studies but suffer substantially from limiting symptoms, also showed reductions in both biomarkers and symptom improvement. After these promising results, a phase 3 study is planned to further evaluate aficamten in NHCM. The ENACT-HF trial tested a standardized diuretic protocol for patients with acute heart failure. To test whether a standardized diuretic protocol is superior to standard of care, Dr. Jeroen Douw of the AZ St. Lucas in Ghent, Belgium, performed a prospective multicenter open-label non-randomized pragmatic ENACT-HF trial. The study included 29 centers in 18 countries worldwide. In each center, standard of care was compared with a standardized diuretic protocol in 2 sequential phases of recruitment. Standard of care was used in phase 1, and the standardized protocol was followed in phase 2. All 401 study participants had been admitted with acute heart failure and had at least one sign of volume overload. The primary endpoint was natriuresis after 1 day. Secondary endpoints included natriuresis and diuresis after 2 days, weight loss after 2 days, and change in congestion score and duration of hospitalization. Following the standardized protocol led to an increase of natriuresis of 64% after 1 day, and this was a significant difference with the standard of care group. A predefined subgroup analysis revealed that patients had a benefit independent of age, sex, kidney function, and left ventricular ejection fraction. The superiority of the protocol was also seen in both natriuresis and diuresis on day 2. They were significantly higher in the group following the diuretic protocol. No difference was seen in weight loss and congestion score after 2 days, but weight loss is possibly less reliable in a pragmatic design. We had a high congestion score already at the beginning of the trial. It might therefore take more time for these patients to see a difference, said Dr. Dow. Patients following the protocol had a 1 day shorter duration of hospitalization. There was no difference in the safety endpoints between standard of care and the diuretic protocol. Another trial investigated the effect of repeated electronic nudges on flu vaccination rates in patients with heart failure. Influenza vaccination rates remain suboptimal among patients with heart failure, HF, despite known effectiveness and strong guideline recommendations. The recently published results of the Danish Nudge Flu trial revealed that select electronic letter-based nudges effectively increase influenza vaccination rates among adults of 65 years or older. In the 2022-2023 influenza season, all eligible Danish citizens of 65 years or older received, through the Danish governmental electronic letter system, either no letter or letter-based nudges based on 9 different behavioral strategies. The primary endpoint of the trial was a receipt of influenza vaccination. The most successful motivators to get vaccinated were repeated electronic letters and letters emphasizing the cardiovascular benefits of vaccination. Dr. Niklas Johansen of the University of Copenhagen in Denmark presented the current pre-specified analysis of the Nudge Flu trial, which explored whether the effectiveness of these electronic nudges also extended to patients with heart failure and whether they have unintended off-target effects. The pre-specified analysis also included patients younger than 65 years, in total 65,075. In total, 33,109 patients with HF were identified. The overall vaccination rate in the HF population was 71.8%, but in patients below 65 years of age, only 44.6%. The likelihood of HF patients getting an influenza vaccination increased significantly with the number of guideline-directed medical therapy classes at baseline, from 75.2% in those with no GDMT medication to 86.5% in those with 4-5 GDMT classes. As in the main study, repeated electronic letters with a reminder follow-up letter 14 days later and those focusing on the cardiovascular benefits were most successful in the HF subgroup. The effectiveness of both nudging strategies was consistent across all major cardiovascular disease subgroups. Independent of HF status and the number of GDMT classes, patients receiving the nudges were more likely to get a flu vaccination compared with those receiving no letters. Moreover, the nudges did not have a negative influence on the uptake of the total number of GDMT prescriptions filled. Our study showed that HF status did not modify the effectiveness of electronic behaviorally designed letters, although we did observe a trend towards attenuated effectiveness of the cardiovascular benefits nudges among those on low levels of GDMT, concluded Dr. Johansen. Then there was the Phase 2 TRACER HF trial, which investigated a copper chelating agent in patients with heart failure. Copper is an essential trace mineral with important roles in the myocardium. As Professor James Giannuzzi of the Harvard Medical School pointed out, it scavenges oxygen-free radicals, serves as a cofactor for ATP production, and promotes iron and zinc uptake. Triantine HCl is an oral copper chelator that acts as a copper chaperone at low doses, restoring normal intracellular copper concentrations, which has shown to reverse cardiac remodeling in experimental models. The Phase 2a TRACER HF trial examined multiple doses of triantine HCl from 50 mg twice daily to 300 mg twice daily in participants with heart failure and reduced ejection fraction. In this trial, 190 participants were enrolled at 27 sites in North America and China. All patients had heart failure with a left ventricular ejection fraction of 40% or lower, and they were randomized to treatment with triantine HCl or placebo for 12 weeks. The primary study endpoint was the effect of triantine HCl on the proportional NT-proBNP change from baseline to 12 weeks. In the highest dose arm, a significant reduction in NT-proBNP was noted at weeks 4 and 8, but not at 12 weeks compared to the placebo group. At week 4, the geometric mean ratio least square mean difference was 0.82 in the highest dose group versus 1.03 in the placebo group, and at week 8, it was 0.79 versus 1.02. Furthermore, trying TNHCL in the 150 and 300 milligram dose groups improved left ventricular and systolic volumes. Participants treated with the highest dose improved by 42 meters in 6-minute walking distance and had better results at the Kansas City Cardiomyopathy Questionnaire. Treatment with the chelating agent was generally well tolerated. Moreover, copper and iron concentrations were not significantly different across treatment arms. Notably, blood pressure and heart rate were not significantly affected by TNHCL, said Professor Giannuzzi. To the question why anti-proBNP concentrations were not lowered at week 12, the professor commented that this conflicting result may have been influenced by the pandemic. He believes that further studies of TNHCL in heart failure are justified in the light of the current results. Dr. Jasper Brugts of the Erasmus University in the Netherlands presented results of the MONITOR-HF trial. Remote monitoring pulmonary artery pressure has emerged as the most successful technique for ambulatory hemodynamic monitoring in heart failure patients. Pulmonary artery pressure, or PAP, is a marker of hemodynamic congestion, which occurs several weeks before symptoms develop, providing a possibility for early intervention. But can assessing hemodynamic congestion based on filling pressures instead of clinical congestion be a way to further improve quality of life and clinical outcomes? To answer this question, the multicenter randomized clinical MONITOR-HF trial was performed, including 348 patients with chronic HF in the Netherlands. They were randomized 1-to-1 either to standard of care or to pulmonary artery guided therapy. The latter group received a small wireless sensor implanted into the pulmonary artery via the femoral vein. The primary endpoint of this trial was quality of life assessed by the Kansas City Cardiomyopathy Questionnaire at 12 months. At 12 months, the average change in the overall summary score improved by plus 7 points in the monitoring group and decreased with minus 0.2 points in the usual care group, yielding a mean difference between groups of 7.1 points in favor of monitoring, with a p-value of 0.013. This difference persisted during the follow-up period of 1.8 years. In this time, there were 117 heart failure hospitalizations or urgent visits in the monitoring group, compared with 212 in the usual care group. This is a meaningful difference and represents 44% reduction in heart failure hospitalization, emphasized Dr. Brugts during the presentation of the results. Subgroup analysis showed that this treatment benefit was consistent in subgroups with an ejection fraction of 40% or less, and those with an ejection fraction higher than 40%. Dr. Brugts explained that a positive effect is induced primarily by changes in diuretics. Diuretics could be optimized based on pulmonary artery pressures as a surrogate of left ventricular filling pressures. Therefore, patients in the intervention group have been in a chronically better decongestive state. Finally, the implant technology showed to be safe and reliable. Finally, there were results from the VOICE COVID-2 study. This study investigated an artificial intelligence or AI-based technology for the screening of SARS-CoV-2 symptoms. COVID-19 has a significant impact on morbidity and mortality, especially among the elderly and those with HF, heart failure. Moreover, the pandemic has shown that it strains healthcare resources. Can telemedicine and AI-based systems be used to alleviate pressure on healthcare systems? To answer this important question, Professor Abhinav Sharma of the McGill University in Canada performed the VOICE COVID-2 trial. To compare the accuracy of voice-based data captured by the system called Alexa with human healthcare professionals for SARS-CoV-2 symptom screening in patients with AF and their caregivers. In this single-center open-label crossover randomized trial, 52 patients with heart failure were randomized to either a healthcare professional or to the Alexa system. This was followed by a crossover, so patients previously assigned to the healthcare professional were assigned to Alexa and vice versa. Both the AI-based technology and the healthcare professional performed a 5-point questionnaire, including a question regarding the preferred language, purpose of the visit, and symptoms of SARS-CoV-2. The primary outcome was the overall concordance level for the 5-point screening questionnaire between the AI system and the research coordinator. In total, 520 questions were delivered with an overall agreement of 97.7%. This agreement was similar when patients first contacted by the coordinator and then switched to Alexa or vice versa. In addition, an unweighted Kappa score of 0.93 suggested highly correlated results. An additionally performed post-screening survey showed that most patients and caregivers, 83%, felt comfortable with the procedure and found it easy to use. However, 25% of participants had privacy concerns regarding AI technology. As Professor Sharma pointed out, it is essential to demonstrate the ability of language-based AI models to complete simple tasks before moving on to more complex ones. The VoiceCOVID-2 study demonstrated that the voice-based AI system performed similarly to a healthcare professional in SARS-CoV-2 symptom screening. Our study is one of the first randomized trials of voice-based AI technologies among patients with HF and their caregivers who are often not considered in digital studies, concluded Professor Sharma.
This podcast was produced by Medicom Medical Publishers.